I don't know, Alexandra. His voice was as quiet as hers. From what I've heard about our father, he's always been something of a playboy.
Hello. Welcome back to the Remedial Magic Podcast. I'm here, as always, with my brother Baylor and our good friend Delbert. And while it may just be the next week for you, the listener, for us, this is the first time we've recorded in 26 days, I think. Something like that. Because I've been out of the country, and frankly, Delbert and I were just tired of hearing Baylor's voice, so I went on vacation so we could have a break.
That is what happens when you move away. People get tired of hearing you.
Oh, so. God, please stop.
No. Though we took a break because I went on vacation for a while, and now we're back in a familiar setting in my basement, or in Baylor, in your case, in our parents' office. And so I am excited to get back into recording, especially because I felt like we really got into a good rhythm with the last episode we recorded. And now it's going to feel like the first episode of the season again. So,
yeah.
At any rate,
I'm feeling a little nervous today. I don't know why. Just because, you know, my voice isn't used to talking as much as I do when we do this episode. So hopefully it goes okay.
How have you guys been? Has anything exciting happened?
No. Your dog ran away.
It did run away. Luckily, we were able to recover her. So that was a fun phone call to get at 5:30 in the morning.
Sorry.
Well, it's not really your fault. I think it's her fault more than anything. But Baylor, what about you?
For me, it's just been same old, same old. I'm working in the mountains right now on a road project, so that's kind of different. But yeah, that's kind of the most exciting thing for me.
Well, that's exciting in its own right, I suppose. Yeah. I got engaged, so that's kind of a big deal. I would talk about it more, but my girlfriend doesn't listen to more than about 2 minutes of each podcast, so we don't need to address it too much.
Not a very strong engagement if you also have a girlfriend.
I said, oh shoot, my fiance. Excuse me, it's still fresh. It's, you know, I gotta be my own man sometimes. But regardless, we're back in this place we love to be in, the recording space. Frankly, the place I would prefer to be over any others. If I had to spend 24 hours a day doing something, it would be sitting in this smelly, dank basement recording this podcast. I was gonna ask if there was any Harry Potter news, but I couldn't find anything relevant or important today. So instead, I would like to throw it to you, Baylor, because I believe you had an interesting conversation in the Discord recently, and I thought maybe we could discuss that a little bit ourselves.
Yeah, sure. It was actually last night. I was talking with Inverardi, actually, was the person who reached out to begin with.
Man himself.
And he was just saying that he finished all of season one of the podcast and has finally started on season two. So thank you, Inverardi, for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Both myself and Delbert reached out and said, I hope you enjoyed, and you never answered us. So hopefully you did. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Just a side note on that. It'd be nice if you do your part in Variety and keep up, because we're doing a lot of hard work promoting your book here.
Wow.
You're at this point 5 weeks late.
Yeah. No, it's all good. But no, the conversation was really about the vacation Bible school that Alex went to in one of the first chapters of this book. And kind of got talking about Inverarity. Sam Gabriel chimed in, a couple other members of the Discord, Coggin Star, and I don't know how to say that one, Kiwi, maybe? But yeah, you know, had some good conversations about basically Christianity in the wizarding world and if it even existed. So we don't have to go too in depth with it. I just wanted to say appreciate everybody that kind of joined the conversation last night. It was kind of a fun little chat.
What was the consensus? Do we think that wizards believe in Christianity or not?
It was kind of both ways. Myself, I'm kind of the thought that they wouldn't, because that kind of contradicts witchcraft, obviously. Kind of going back to our discussion about the Vacation Bible School. But some other people thought that they definitely did, because, you know, they celebrate Christian holidays, all that kind of stuff. I also think that it's just one of those things. We've talked about stuff like this before, but it's just, there's no way to know, because, you know, both Inverardi and J.K. Rowling don't really talk about it. So it's all speculation, basically, on our part.
I don't know about you, Delbert, but I think I'm of the opinion that there's probably some witches and wizards that believe in the same type of thing as a Christian would.
Possibly. I'm not very versed in the Christian world, but I've heard the water to wine thing, and I don't think that's nearly as impressive to wizards as it is to us.
It's probably not, since they can do it, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's obviously, this isn't a theological discussion, but the idea of, like, God and religion is such a massive umbrella. It's got to capture some of the wizards, and maybe wizards look at believers, wizards who believe in God, as the crazy people of their society. Or maybe it's just normal and it's just kind of the same spread that you have in the Muggle world. It's hard to tell. In fact, there's got to be Muggle-born wizards that definitely believe, right? Because when they were quote-unquote non-magical, they probably spent time going to church with family and friends and whatever else. There's got to be a certain percentage that at least are aware of the existence of God or gods, unnamed and named both.
Absolutely. I agree with that, yeah. I also think it'd be pretty sweet if JC himself was a wizard. That would make a lot of sense.
There you go. The canon explanation for what all the things he could do is he was the ancestor of Lord Voldemort himself. So
yeah. No, I think it's a really fascinating topic to talk about, because there's so many different directions that you could go with it, just because it is such a wide ranging topic. But I think you're absolutely right. I would guess that there are, you know, wizards that are, you know, Muggle-born. They were Christian or Muslim or some other religion. And then there's probably wizards, too, that married a Muggle. And then they fell into the religion, whatever the Muggle was into, you know. So I'm sure they absolutely exist.
I mean, if, and this is one big if, if we somehow proved that not only was Harry Potter, but also Alex Quick was completely nonfiction, we just found that out right now, would that alter either of your beliefs?
My brain would explode, most likely. I think if it was proven definitively that magic and the way that Harry Potter magic works was proven real, there would be a massive restructuring of the way people think about a lot of stuff. So,
yeah,
how it would change my beliefs personally, I don't know, I guess, until that happens. But I guarantee I would feel differently than I do now, you know.
It would be an interesting plot twist, that's for sure. I don't think it would change my beliefs, that's for sure, but
it would be a plot twist.
I'm going to start referring,
without question.
Yeah, I'm going to start referring to major historical events as plot twists from now on. Like, oh, the dinosaurs are doing so great. Plot twist meteor.
Yeah, it is a plot twist. So anyways, at any
I apologize.
Rate, it's an interesting...
No, I like it.
It's an interesting conversation, and if you're not in the Discord, you should get in there, because every so often there is an interesting conversation about things like that, as well as a number of other topics that I'm not going to get into, because some of them I don't understand and others I just don't care about. But on the topic of of wizards and Christianity, let's talk about something else.
Oh, what a transition.
Yeah. I was just going to throw out our social medias really quick, because I believe we have an email.
We do. We've had one for 6 weeks.
It's been here for a while.
We've been waiting.
We don't forget about the emails, especially when they come from the same person most of the time. And so we do appreciate that. But our Instagram and Twitter are @the_RM podcast. And then our Gmail is remedialmagicpodcast@gmail.com. You can also, if you want, reach out to us on Reddit, which, incidentally, somebody did a while back, asking us to discuss their fan fiction that they wrote, because they're also writing a serial fan fiction that's being released week by week. And I believe the intention back then was for us to maybe spend some time on our podcast just discussing it. And instead, I think we're going to try to interview this person next week during next week's episode to discuss their fan fiction, because their fan fiction is a nice long fan fiction similar to Alexander Quick. It's called Bagsy Beetlethorn, I believe. That's the name of the main character. I don't necessarily remember the title of the first book yet, but we're hoping for a special episode next week interviewing this person. And it's all because they reached out to us on our social medias. And so now that I'm done with that long, winding rant about social media and teasing next week, Delbert, we do have an email.
We do.
And it's from, I would say, number one super fan, Nick from New Jersey.
It is Nick from New Jersey. It's always Nick from New Jersey. If you want to compete with Nick from New Jersey, all you have to do is send us 3 emails and you're caught up. That being said, Nick from New Jersey says he apologizes that he missed the casting of Abraham Thorne, because he brought this up many weeks after we had casted him. I forget who he casted and I tried to look it up.
I thought it was Benedict Cumberbatch.
I think you're right. Yes, indeed. I think I liked it.
Yes, it is indeed.
No need to apologize. It's a good casting.
Yeah.
It's very strong.
It's good. He also says he was listening to us pick Alex's Hogwarts house like 4 or 5 months ago when he listened to it, of course.
No, come on. That was like 6 episodes ago.
Sure. But he wanted to point out that there is an alternative fan fiction that mashes Alex Quick and Harry Potter called Alexander Quick and the Order of the Phoenix. And in this, her house is indeed Slytherin. And I'm going to take that as the law and say I was right all along.
It's interesting. I don't know if we can consider that the law or not. That fan fiction, and I don't know if it's still being updated, but it was being written by former favorite of the Discord, Jack B. Thimble. And we haven't seen nor heard from that guy in some time. And so I don't know if he can be considered an official source. I'm going to stick with Gryffindor.
He was a Discord mod at one point. That means he had all the power.
He did.
Which means canon.
Oh, well. You know what they say about those who abuse their power. They surreptitiously quit the Discord.
Ouch.
I'm going to have to stick with my Gryffindor thoughts as well, just because of what happened at the end of the last arc that we discussed. Her just busting in there, getting crucioed, you know. It was very Gryffindor-esque.
I completely agree. I think her reckless, courageous behavior is fitting for Gryffindor, but I can see why people want to put her in Slytherin. My first instinct is to put her in Slytherin, before I read the house descriptions in that episode.
Listen, you had convinced me, so I'm going to stick with Gryffindor as well. Sorry, Nick, you've been demoted from Superfan.
What else does Nick have to say? Is there anything else in there?
I believe that was most of it.
He just linked that story, and he also did say that there were spoilers for the first 4 AQ books, so I will not be reading it until probably for 2 more years because of how long it takes us to get through these books.
It's probably a good idea that you don't read that for spoilers. And also, I just want to say, Jack B. Thimble, if you're out there still listening to this podcast, come back to us. I like talking to you in the Discord. It's always interesting, and you say some things that really miff me in regards to mathematics.
Discord hasn't been the same without you, bud.
It hasn't.
It has not. And so, thank you, Nick, for writing in once again. I hope you continue to write in, because you are the closest thing that the three of us have to a friend at this point. So, I'm sorry. I'm really a little bit tired and delirious, so I cannot be held responsible for the things I'm saying. But I do appreciate you writing in, Nick. It's always a pleasure. Should we move on? Good Lord.
This is an experience.
We're a little fast and loose today, apparently. Baylor, I cut you off. Were you going to say something else?
I was just going to bring up our good buddy Raul on Instagram, who wrote in as well. He's the equivalent of a Instagram super fan, because he's been writing in since November of last year. Pretty consistently.
All right. Well, we have super fan Nick and Insta fan Raul. What does Raul have for us today?
Yeah, so he, this was a couple weeks ago. So once again, Raul, now you know why we hadn't got back to you before this. But he says, I just finished the AQ series. Kind of feel like I'm craving more now and feel a bit of a void after reading everything from back or from front to back. Do you experience the same thing, and how do you deal with it? First of all, congrats on reading the entire series. You couldn't stick with the arc to arc plot line that we were going on. I completely understand. I would probably do the same thing. But my thoughts, I always sent a message back to him personally, and I just said I recall personally feeling that way when I finished Harry Potter, when I finished Twilight, and I've even felt that with a couple standalone books as well, but I think you just have to carry on and try to find a different series to invest yourself with. And I just pointed him in the direction of some other fan fictions that would be a good read that regarding Harry Potter. So that's what I said.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. Raul, if you're listening, check back next week when we look at Bagsy Beetlethorn. That might be worth a read.
It might be worth a read. And Raul, if you finished AQ, I think there is a series of books you would be interested in reading next. They're called Harry Potter.
Boo.
So if you're interested, I would check it out. It's pretty good, pretty similar to AQ. Definitely worth reading, but to be honest, I understand what you mean about finishing a series of books or movies or a TV series and feeling kind of like empty when you're done, because there's not anything else to read next or to watch next. And usually my solution is just to try other series until I find something else I can binge or whatever else, and that's typically my strategy. However, when it comes to Harry Potter, I just reread the series. I just read it again. You know,
you miss stuff. I mean, I've picked up stuff on this third now reread of AQ that I missed the second time.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely. So, yep.
We feel your pain.
One last idea too, Raul. Find another friend who has read it and a brother who hasn't, and start a podcast.
That's true.
There you go.
You can start a podcast about Alexander Quick. It's good for roughly 40 to 50 listeners per week.
True.
It's not bad.
And very few ratings.
If you have a basement to record in, that's a good start. So consider that. But, and being a little bit more serious, liking books the way that three of us do, we understand what you're talking about. And I guess the best way that I have found to get past that feeling is just to find something else to read or to watch. So
I'm about to be the same exact way, because Better Call Saul's got like 5 episodes left, and I'm not ready to leave the Breaking Bad universe again.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I finished Better Call Saul up into whatever was on Netflix, and luckily I just immediately jumped into something else. I can't remember what at this moment. Rewatched all of that, immediately jumped into The Boys, which is what I'm watching currently. And after The Boys, I still have Stranger Things. So just plan ahead, you know?
Ozarks.
That's what I watched was Ozark. Yeah. So plan ahead, find something else to read. And then when you feel like it's been enough time, just come back and read the series again if you want to. There's nothing wrong with reading the same books more than once or more than five times or whatever. If you like them, you're reading for your own enjoyment. So that's something to consider as well. But we appreciate you writing in and contacting us. You are our first Insta fan, I would say.
Absolutely.
Oh, I was just going to say, especially because we can verify that you're a real person, unlike Jasmine, whatever her name was, who might be a bot still. We don't know.
Well, she reached out and verified she was real, but maybe that was just the bot.
Oh, no. They're learning.
No, we're just kidding. We're kidding. There was one more thing I just thought of is that if you just got done reading the series, go listen to the audiobook of the series. Like, that's what I do with Harry Potter because I love Jim Dale's voice. He puts me in the best mood ever just because it's very, very nice. So maybe go enjoy Sam Gabriel's voice.
Yeah, or get in the Discord for real, and you can talk about Alex Quick all you want in there. So that's something to consider as well. I think we have the link to the Discord in our description of our podcast or on our link tree, perhaps.
It should be in both places, but for sure the link tree, if not in the description.
And if you don't have a device capable of allowing you to get on Discord, just send us another message and Delbert will figure that out for you. But God dang, I'm telling you. We do need to move on to our main discussion, which is an interesting one because it's one chapter.
Only one.
We're back to the old format, only for this week. We are not ever going back to chapter by chapter again, but this feels like a very important chapter to keep on its own, considering what we talked about in last week's episode. And so we're just doing chapter 13 this week. It's called Maximilian's Mission. And before we get into that, before one of us gives a summary, because we talked about so much stuff in last week's episode, I just wanted to recap really quick because there's a lot of things that go on that are pretty significant, starting with the fact that Darla tried to kill Alex with the Avada Kedavra spell. That happened right away into our discussion last week, blew all of our minds, couldn't believe it happened. And then a whole bunch of stuff with Mors Mortis goes on until Alex is tired of watching a bunch of people just torture animals and quits the Mors Mortis Society. And that sort of leads her to forming these tenuous relationships about with Tomo as she kind of protects her from Mors Mortis Society. And then also with Maximilian, who we eventually find out is Alex's brother. Not whole brother, but half brother. They share the same father in the Dark Prince himself, Abraham Thorne, the leader of the Dark Convention, allegedly the attempted murderer of Governor General Huckstein, allegedly sexiest wizard in the Confederation, allegedly, who knows. So last week's episode, if you haven't listened to it and you're just jumping into this one, you are making a big mistake. You need to go back and listen to that episode before this one, because I think if you just jump into this one, you will not have enough context to fully understand what's going on. With that being said, which one of the two of you would like to summarize today's discussion? Excellent answers. I'll do it. Not a problem. In this chapter called Maximilian's Mission, we find out that the Mors Mortis Society invited Maximilian and Alex because they know that they're the children of Abraham Thorne. And the reason they know is because evidently John Manuelito and possibly the other leader, Sue, are in contact with actual dark wizards, and they're hoping to recruit Alex and Max, or perhaps isolate them and kill them or something to that effect. After we find that out, Max and Alex talk a little bit and agree to talk later about the fact that he just dropped this bombshell that he's Alex's brother. She goes back to her dorm room, returns Honey, the ferret, I can never read, the Jarvey, to Angelique, and tells Angelique to ask Darla what happened to Honey. And then, essentially, Alex eats breakfast the next morning, goes to a J-Rock exercise where Maximilian assigns her extra duty, but it's not, he's not being mean this time. It's like fake extra duty so that he can actually have a conversation with Alex and she can get some answers to some questions, which is kind of nice because it's way earlier in this book that she's getting answers than it was in the last book. And that's kind of the general summary of this chapter. It also strikes me it's good to keep this chapter as a chapter on its own because it feels like there's as much information in this one chapter as there was in the previous four that we lumped all together anyways. So I just wanted to ask, what do you guys think about this chapter when you first read it?
This chapter brought with it more drops almost than we've dealt with the entire series. I would say I spent a good amount of time with my mouth open reading this chapter.
That is an interesting visual.
I agree. I mean, the last chapters leading up to this, the ones that are so aptly named the Dark Arts and the Darker Arts, those were great. Those were really good arcs leading up, but we really needed an explanation, and this is perfect.
It really is as if Inverarity was like, okay, it's been almost a book and a half. I guess I'm going to finally give Alex some information that she's been asking for since, I don't know, chapter 3 of the first book. So it was really satisfying for a couple reasons, because she gets information, but also because it was nice to see her have an interaction with Maximilian that wasn't just like antagonist versus antagonist the whole time. I don't know about you guys, but I think it's very interesting that our friend John Manuelito has contact with actual dark wizards, because up until this point, the first time I read, I kind of thought he was a bit of a poser. Like, he was doing this stuff to seem cool in front of the other Mors Mortis kids.
I absolutely agree with that. I completely thought that they were like, and I even remember saying this, like, they were just doing stuff because they thought it was cool and they were trying to impress people. And even they looked scared from some of the stuff, or like relieved when that one demon went away. Like, they thought that they couldn't do it. So the fact that they're basically the Draco Malfoy Crabbe and Goyle of the school is quite surprising to me, I would say.
I have a similar but different take. I agree with both things. He has the contacts with the Dark Convention, and he's a poser. There's a reason that the Dark Convention is not the Thorn Circle. They're clearly not as impactful or not as powerful as the people that were actually alongside Abraham Thorne. So I think he is a poser, and the Dark Convention is probably also a bunch of posers.
That's interesting, actually, because what do we know if the Dark Convention's ever actually done something impressive? Or are they just people who, like, sit at home and look at a picture of Abraham Thorne on the wall and just, like gesticulate about how cool he is?
They're sitting there listening to My Chemical Romance all day long.
I was actually thinking that same thing. Like, until that name drop this chapter, the Dark Convention name drop, I kind of forgot that they were different than the Thorn Circle.
Yeah, actually, I think it's just easy for your brain to lump all dark-ish wizards together into a pile, you know? And so I agree that it's easy to forget that the Dark Convention is separate from the Thorn Circle a little bit. In this case, it's kind of like, you know, Voldemort had his Death Eaters, and then in the seventh movie, when he assaults Hogwarts Castle, there's like 1,000 people with him. Certainly they were not all Death Eaters, right? So that would be like what the Dark Convention is to Abraham Thorne.
or even just his inner circle, right? If we're talking about Voldemort, there's a few names that go around with like Bellatrix and Lucius and Crabbe, Goyle and that, but there's plenty of others that aren't at the meeting at Malfoy Mansion. There's plenty of others that aren't with him all the time when he's, you know, devising plans. So, I mean, that could be the Dark Convention side of this.
That's true. Yeah, that is very true. The other thing that Max says that I think is interesting before Alex goes to bed here is that he believes that Darla is just a silly girl trying to impress older boys. I think it's a fair assessment based on what we've seen in the book so far. I don't understand why 12-year-old Darla is trying to shack up with like 17-year-old boys, but I think it's pretty apt. I just wondered if you guys agree or if you think maybe there's something else going on or whatever.
Delbert, I have a long-winded explanation thing.
You go ahead, because I was just going to say I agree.
Yeah, okay. I think on a surface level, I agree. I think that she's doing a really good job showing that side of it and, you know, making it convincing, obviously, to Max. But, like, during the dueling club, you know, when she cast a Avada Kedavra at Alex, that was before Alex had left the group or anything. Like, Darla, or Alex was really Darla's only friend link in the left in the group at that point. And her reaction, or I guess not reaction, but her first decision after that last meeting is to try to kill Alex. That something doesn't align with me. Like one of the guys said, "Oh, hey, you should try to cast Avada Kedavra on somebody. Just, you know, and then you'll really prove yourself." You know what I mean? Like,
that's a really good point.
There's got to be something else there, especially just how weird she's been this book. Like, there's got to be something there.
It's a really good point. I guess it doesn't make much sense for a 12-year-old girl to go, "I know what'll get that guy to like me. I'll kill someone." Yeah.
I think it would be more convincing if the guy she said she was with that summer, that was like her boyfriend. I can't remember his name now. But if he was in...
Alleged boyfriend.
Yeah, alleged boyfriend. If he was in the Morsborn Society, I would believe it a bit more. But he's not even affiliated with it. So who's she trying to impress if that's the... If that's the case,
it's a great question. Truly, it's a great question because she's being a weirdo.
Yeah.
She is absolutely being a weirdo. I also like that Max tells Alex just to take Honey back to Angelique and let Darla deal with whatever the consequences are going to be. And the reason I like that is because I think it's the best solution. You know,
man, I'm surprised to hear you say that. I liked that solution. I thought it was great. I thought you were going to talk about the solution he said beforehand, where he says, "Oh, I think you're going to have to tell her it was too late to save her."
Well, sure, but then that's not a solution still, because then who kills the ferret?
Seemingly them.
Alex wouldn't stand for that.
Well,
yeah.
You know, we just saw Alex get crucioed a bunch of times because she wanted to protect a snake. So, I don't know. Obviously, I hate Honey to death. Still do. You know, wouldn't be sad if it ended up floating in a lake somewhere or something. However, Alex is not feeling that same way about animals.
True. She's a reverse sociopath.
Exactly. Alex is the closest thing to an angel on Earth that there can be.
I think that I also like the decision, you know, the advice Max gave Alex here. And I'm also kind of happy because I feel like just from Inverardi's standpoint, he could have easily made this into a separate arc in the story of trying to get to the bottom of Angelique and Darla's friendship, you know, trying to fix it or whatever. And I'm just glad that he was like, "I don't even want to deal with it," whatever. So I appreciate it from a reader standpoint, because I'm all about the information now. I want to figure out what the hell the deal is with this Thorn guy.
Well, I think it's a good call anyways, just because it's not something that needs a long-winded explanation for the reader, right? It's very easy for the reader to accept this, because the solution is pretty straightforward. Go give the ferret back and tell her to ask Darla if she wants information. It gets Alex completely out of the situation. And then the wrap up is very clean as well, because Alex does do that. She does return Honey, tells Angelique to ask Darla what the deal is. And then the next day at breakfast, we see there's must have been some sort of conversation, because Angelique and Darla don't come to breakfast together and don't sit with each other at the breakfast table. And so it's a really nice and tidy end to Alex's involvement with this, with that particular situation.
Yep.
Now, I thought it was notable, kind of going back to the previous night, that Anna got Tomo back to her dorm room and there didn't seem to be any conflicts. And then Alex promised to explain things to Anna the next day. And whether she does or doesn't explain it, whenever Anna or whenever Alex tells Anna, I'm going to do it, but I'll do it tomorrow, the BS flag goes straight up in the air for me. Because I just don't think that. I think Anna's too trusting and Alex is aware of that.
Yeah. I mean, I consistently feel bad for Anna. Like, she just seems to think that Alex is going to change every time that they have the heart-to-heart conversation. But that's not Alex. That's not who she is. She's here to just do whatever she wants and make up stories that other people want to hear.
Alex exists to be an interesting character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a tale of... you know, the friends is like it was, like Harry Potter was, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the three amigos in this book. It's Alex and her followers, basically. But I do just from my point of view, expect a explanation given to Anna in some form, just because Alex kind of explained herself to everybody else and Anna as well. So, I don't know. Obviously, maybe it won't happen the next day, like she said, but I'm assuming it's coming, maybe.
Eventually, Alex does usually confess to Anna at some point, so I think that's a fair expectation. Something else interesting about the next morning at breakfast, before we get to the really important stuff, is that Alex goes to check on Tomo to basically say, if somebody messes with you, you tell me. So now Tomo is the unlikely friend in the story or whatever, but also to see if the supposed curse that comes from telling other people about the Mors Mortis Society had done anything. And to this point, it hasn't, you know? And so I'm wondering if it will, you know, with Dumbledore's army, as soon as Marietta Edgecombe told Professor Umbridge about Dumbledore's army, she got terrible, horrible, vicious pimples all over her face immediately. So either this is a curse that takes its time to work, or maybe that part of their initiation was just a lie. I'm not really sure what to expect, I suppose.
The interesting thing for me is that back when Max and Alex were talking, Max said that he had, you know, his buddy. I don't know what, I can't remember his name because I'm dumb. Old, but
good old Martin.
Yeah, Martin's a charm breaker, I guess, or a curse breaker or whatever. And so he had Martin break the curse. So that had me a little nervous, I guess, because if there was a curse to break, I guess I don't know if the curse breaker would know if there's a curse to break before they break it. But I am wondering if something will happen to Tomo. But yeah, I'm agreeing with you. Alex sure has talked a lot about the Mors Mortis Society. I guess she hasn't said any specific names or anything, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and also, like, Anna and the Ozarkers sort of figured it out for themselves what Alex was up to, so that might play into it as well. I don't know. It's just interesting that if it is an empty threat, that doesn't really align with the fact that they were casting Crucio at things a few meetings later on.
Yep, right. They definitely seem to know more about dark magic than they're letting on, at least I think.
It's interesting to think about whether or not John and Sue know dark magic, or if they're being fed information about dark magic week by week from their contacts from the dark convention. Because I would think that even as whatever they are, 17-year-old kids at this school, 18-year-old kids at this school, they probably haven't been exposed to too much. Like, knowing about the snake stone that they made and knowing how to summon that thing from the lands below portal, that seems like very advanced knowledge to have as a high schooler. It seems more likely that somebody is giving them that information to me.
That's fair. That would be terrifying, though. Like, calling up your buddy who's in the Dark Convention, he's like, oh, hey, try this trick. It summons a demon from the depths of the lands below. And then if you do this counter curse just right, it'll go away. Just give it a try.
Yeah.
This sounds a little bit too close to home for me. I'm not advocating for any of this, but when I was in high school, I did have a couple older friends who were into not magic, but some illicit substances. And they kind of talked exactly how you just did, Baylor, where they're like, this is what'll happen, and here's how you get over it. So it's kind of interesting, the parallels I just drew from that.
It's nice. Are you incriminating yourself?
No, no.
So that was allegedly.
I didn't listen to them.
Right.
Hearsay.
You didn't. Right. They said it to you, and you didn't listen.
I mean, I heard them. I didn't listen.
Just to establish for any would-be law enforcement officers who are listening to our podcast, Delbert only heard this. He never followed up on it.
What's the statute of limitations?
I have no idea. It doesn't matter because you didn't do it.
You're right. None of it.
But it's a great point that you bring up, Baylor, because if there is somebody saying, hey, do this now, do this next, that is probably pretty scary for John and Sue, you would think. Because How are you supposed to know what's going to happen next with some of this stuff? Right? Like, exactly. The Snake Stone seems innocent enough. Summoning a demon from some hellscape beyond the mortal realm, not so much.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if we talked about this already. I could swear that the Ministry of Magic in Harry Potter could detect when somebody casts an unforgivable spell, an unforgivable curse. I could have sworn that that would trip their trigger somehow.
I thought they could detect that a spell was used in an area, but not necessarily who used it.
I could have sworn when fake Moody is torturing Neville Longbottom, he's also not literally torturing him, but
the spider.
Torturing the spider, and then Neville is reliving all of his childhood trauma in a span of 30 seconds. I could have sworn he's also monologuing about how they know if you cast this stuff, so he had to get permission to show it or something like that.
I can't remember.
All I know is this is another sign of Dean Grimm's incompetency. That there's people casting Crucio in her basement and she doesn't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe she does know.
Maybe they're not unforgivable in the United States.
Oh, well. It's like the parallel between the United States view on assault rifles versus every other country in the whole world.
Yeah.
It's like everybody knows that it's probably not necessary, but it's my right to use it, so don't take it away kind of thing.
Oh boy.
Sure. Like, perhaps you really need to teach that garden gnome to stay out of your lawn so their Crucio's okay. But we just got to make sure it doesn't get into our schools.
Yeah.
Like, in this exact instance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
According to this person on stackexchange.com, the trace does not distinguish between unforgivable curses and other magic.
Oh, well, Stack Exchange is the number one source for Harry Potter information. This has gotten derailed a touch. However, back to the original topic of this curse, whether or not it does something. At this point in reading this book, I don't think it does. I think it was all bluster and no bite. You know? John Manuelito cannot be a highly accomplished wizard like Hermione Granger was. There's no way he knows how to do this.
No. Not a chance.
You know what I mean? The most important part of the chapter is at the end, and we haven't even gotten to it yet, but we will right now. Alex goes to a J-Rock meeting or exercise or whatever, and Maximilian assigns her extra exercise like he has been, but this time he's not doing it to be a huge jerk. He's doing it so that they can have this long-awaited conversation. And he gives her a ton of information about Abraham Thorne that she's been looking for a long, long time. And so it's really interesting. And I also think it's really interesting that he starts off kind of in a sympathetic way by telling Alex that he knows that Ben Journey tried to kill her, and he calls him a traitor.
I want to expand on that. Did anyone call him Benedict besides Abraham Thorne? Or was he Ben to everyone else?
I believe that Dean Grimm called him Benedict during their last battle.
I think definitely so, too.
Definitely not. Dean Grimm definitely said, "I'm disappointed, Ben."
I could swear somebody did, but certainly nobody who would have talked to Maximilian.
Because my thought is, how does he know the full name if that's something that was not popular?
Right, that's the thing. Like, certainly nobody would have come up to Max at the school and said, by the way, this guy named Benedict Journey tried to kill your sister.
Worst case, they would have said Ben, because that's what he went by.
So regardless, your theory stands, I think.
Yeah.
There's very few people that could have told him that, and one of them is certainly possibly Abraham Thorne, right? So it's something to consider.
You know who said it? It was the Governor General. He called him Benedict.
Ah, so then maybe, actually.
Yeah.
Because certainly if they're interviewing Alex, they've probably interviewed Maximilian as well.
That's fair.
And Thorne did as well.
Yeah. There's a couple possibilities.
Regardless, he sounds, like, personally upset.
He does. He sounds
like
he's personally invested in the situation.
Yeah, which, granted, it's his sister, so you could say that. But I almost think, and I thought this on my first reread as well, that he might have known this guy at some point.
Oh, like, that's maybe interesting.
Maybe also interacted with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's interacted with Abraham Thorne, there's a chance he's interacted with other members of the Circle.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, my thoughts were, I mean, he talks about his childhood and how his mom, you know, they were obviously married when he was born. And so I'm sure that probably the members of the Thorn Circle were probably around the house, you know, around their home, whatever, before he tried to kill the Governor General and became the most wanted man in America.
I think that's absolutely correct, that there's definitely some intermixing between Abraham Thorne's personal family and members of the Thorn Circle.
Yep.
I think it's really interesting that Abraham Thorne has been married and divorced at least 3 times.
Yeah.
Possibly more.
Yeah.
And getting busy.
Yeah.
A lot of siblings.
Having a lot of kids, yeah. Alex goes from being an only child to finding out she has a brother and 1, 2, 3 sisters.
5, I believe. He says, "You and I have 4 sisters besides Julia."
Okay, and we get the names of Julia, who's younger than Max.
Yep.
And then 2 older sisters named Lucilla, Lucy and Drew.
Lucilla, Drusilla, and Valeria.
Oh, I missed that one in this. So we get several names as well. And so I bet Alex is feeling pretty overwhelmed, right?
And a daughter.
Only child.
And a daughter by the first wife, but they don't name who that is.
Sure. Only child to 1 of 6 siblings all of a sudden. Now, half siblings. Because, at least to our knowledge, Alex is the only child of Claudia. But, still, like, a lot of information for Alex to take in all of a sudden that she's not the only child of Abraham Thorne. Do you guys think this makes her feel better about being a child of Abraham Thorne? Like, all of a sudden, she's not alone in this weird situation she's in.
I would think so. Like, I get that we find out later in here that there has been some limited contact between Max and Abraham Thorne. And she's probably not feeling great that she hasn't had any contact at all besides the letter from the last book. But at the same time, she just went from Abraham Thorne's daughter to one of Abraham Thorne's 7 kids.
Yeah, I think she does feel better. But the interesting thing for me in this scenario is that last book we were subjected to the idea from the letter that, you know, Abraham Thorne loved her daughter with all of his heart. Like, you're my own. The way I took it, you're my only daughter, and I love you so much, and I wish I could be with you. And then we find out that there's, in fact, 7 kids in total. It's a wild twist for the middle of the second book, I will say that. And also, it's an interesting look, because I guess I've never read a book like this where something like this has happened, but I would imagine a much easier angle to write this would be Alex knows a lot, and then she's telling these siblings as they're discovered about Abraham Thorne. But in this book, it's you have 6 siblings, Alex, and I've met all of them. I've met our dad several times, and she's just been, you know, by herself in the Muggle world and has no experience at all with Abraham Thorne or her siblings until what happened the last book. So it's a very interesting, a very intriguing angle that Inverarity's taken here. I'm very excited to find out more.
How disappointed would you be if I told you we don't meet any of the other siblings?
A little bit. I don't know.
I'm not saying that. I was just curious how disappointed you would be. But okay. Alex goes from only child to 1 of 7. And then Max also drops the bomb that while he's met his dad a few times, it's hard to talk or speak with him anyways, because the Justice Department is always watching. And so now Alex, I guess she's probably already somewhat aware of this, but now she's aware that not only does she have 7 siblings, she might not ever get to meet any of them or her father because the Confederation is always paying attention to everything that her and all of her siblings are doing. And so her life just, it expands for a second and then it gets really restricted and constricting again. Mm-hmm. If I was told this, I would feel a little bit suffocated, to be honest, because all of a sudden then Alex has to be back on guard, paying attention to what she does and what she says.
That's a good point, especially because we also find out that Diana Grimm interviews each kid one time every year.
That's true.
It's interesting, too, because you feel like if anybody were to tell Alex before Max here, it would have been Diana when they met up in the ice cream shop. You know, especially now that she knows Abraham Thorne is her dad and everything, like, why not just let the cat out of the bag or whatever?
Why has she not interviewed Alex until now?
Yeah.
As well. Like, if she's interviewing all of them once per year, surely, even once Alex turned, like, 9 or so, she would be interviewing her, too. It's not like Abraham Thorne wouldn't visit Alex when she was young for some reason, you know?
Right.
Maybe it's because she was so young, they didn't think she'd have information to offer up, but...
Maybe Archie's a WJD implant.
Oh, no. Can't we just leave Archie alone for one episode? Holy...
Well, it does bring to mind, though, the question that maybe they've just been observing Alex from afar this whole time.
Oh, yeah. I think that's absolutely the case. I think you have to have, like, a Miss Fig there in the neighborhood. Maybe Brian's mom. I don't know. Maybe Brian himself.
Oh, Mrs. Seabury.
Oh.
That's interesting.
She's a spy.
Maybe Billy Boggleson is just a really gross-looking adult who didn't grow up very much.
Hold on. I'm kind of on this theory, because if I recall, Miss Seabury doesn't like Alex very much.
Right. And it has.
She knows that she's the daughter of a heinous war criminal.
That's why she doesn't like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
It's nothing to do with the fact that her children were almost killed.
Multiple times.
Yeah. But that actually lines up with Alex being the daughter of a heinous war criminal. So, you know, regardless, finding out you have all these siblings is probably like, oh, wow, that's really cool. I'm not alone. And then Max goes, but they're watching us constantly. So what can we do about it? That part's not very fun also.
Yeah.
And the last little tidbit of information that Max gives for me is the most interesting. And that's that he is actually, air quotes, working with the Justice Department to try to figure out why the Dark Convention cares about the Mors Mortis Society.
Yes.
He dances around that very, very well, I think.
Well, I think we also need to walk back just a little bit here of an earlier conversation where we called Dean Grimm incompetent and said she should work somewhere specific, and really, she's kind of not in control, is what it seems like.
She's not in control at all.
It's not really her fault because she's being overridden by the government, but it's not her fault that these meetings continue to occur.
Yeah, because Max tells Alex that he's working with the WJD to figure this out, but he also says that Dean Grimm knows what's going on, but her power is limited to just trying to expel kids that get caught being at the meetings.
And on top of that, she's pissed because apparently she's not even speaking to her sister anymore, is what Max says in this. So there's a big disconnect between Dean Grimm and the government right now.
Well, it's very interesting. Why is the government acting this? Obviously, they've got bigger fish to fry, right? Because they're trying to catch Abraham Thorne. But it's bizarre that they're letting, like, teenage kids teach even younger adolescent kids how to cast torturing charms on each other and stuff. Like, I guess it's the price you pay for information, but come on.
It's common police work, as Ice Cube, my man from 22 Jump Street, says. Infiltrate the dealers, find the suppliers.
Yeah.
The Mors Mortis are just the dealers. They're trying to find the suppliers.
It's scummy.
Oh, it's bad.
Like, it makes Dean Grimm be the best person in the school.
You know what I mean? It's also the second time this has happened, because she was pretty sure someone was trying to kill Alex last year. And the Wizarding Justice Department was like, yeah, we'll station our most inept agent, but just keep letting it happen so we can find out who did it.
It's like, imagine hating one man so much that you're willing to let children die in order to catch that one man. That would never happen in the real world.
It's strange.
This book is a little too real. Might have to put it down for a couple months.
Especially because Abraham Thorne hasn't really, as far as I can remember from the last two books, including this one, is that he hasn't made an appearance publicly since he tried to assassinate the Governor General 11 years ago.
That's true. The only appearance that we know of is the letter to Alex, but
yeah,
what's he doing that's not being broadcast to the public that the government's aware of?
Right.
That also brings me to think that there is somebody from the WJD stationed at the school in disguise. There's got to be. If the Justice Department is always watching, there has to be somebody at the school.
That is interesting, actually. I agree with what you're saying, if they're always paying attention to what's going on with the Thorne children.
Yeah.
So, that's a lot of information that Max gives. A lot of stuff is going on at Charmbridge and with Max and with Alex, and the fact that Max is working technically against his own father maybe tells us that Abraham Thorne's not this mysteriously mislabeled hero that we think he is, or maybe Max is just believing the mislabeling. It's hard to say, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, because we've kind of uncovered that the Dark Convention is separate-ish from the Thorn Circle, maybe he's working against the Dark Convention, but not against his dad. That is a possibility.
That is interesting as well. There's a lot of ways this story can go from this point forward.
Yeah.
I was just going to...
Specific... Oh,
Sorry, Delbert. I was just gonna say it's like opening a dictionary, and like you're turning through the pages, and then like page 240 of 360, there's another little book inside. That's like what just happened in this chapter. Like there's so much, there's so many different possibilities. And I was just thinking that he talks about his mom and his Abraham Thorne get divorced kind of when he goes to kill the Governor General. Well, that was when Alex was born. So then that means that Abraham Thorne was cheating on Max's mom with Claudia, or, you know, slept around with Claudia on Max's mom. And then this all happened around the same time.
Yeah, I think it's safe to assume that Abraham Thorne was sleeping with anybody he wanted to.
Yeah.
Because even Alex, who's 12, calls him a playboy, and I don't even know how she would know what that means at the age of 12. This was written in 2007, not 2020, so like, it's reasonable to think a 12-year-old was still a little naive back in the day.
You might be able to put two and two together, though, having heard he had three ex-wives or whatever, and then hearing the word playboy.
Yeah.
Be able to figure it out.
There's potential there.
I also want to point out, and this is one specific part of this entire chapter, but it has Max calling her out and saying, "You sound awfully loyal to a man you've never even met," in regards to Abraham Thorne. And then Alex fires back and says, "I'm not loyal to him, but I don't see why I should be loyal to the Confederation either." This little set here makes me think that there's more to this conversation from Max's side, where he's kind of letting information slide as he sees fit and is judging her reaction to those tidbits to try to find out more about her and where she stands in the whole debacle.
I think you're absolutely correct. He's got all the power in the situation because he's the one who knows things.
Yeah.
So he can absolutely only give information he wants to give while keeping everything else under wraps until he knows if he can trust Alex, if she can be responsible with the information. So I think you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, because like right there where he says that, he says it quietly, almost thinking like, it almost sounds like maybe he doesn't like that direction she's going in. But then when she counters and says, "Well, I'm not loyal to the Confederation either," he nods along. Like he's like, "Oh, okay." So she has thought both sides of this.
Right.
Also regarding that, you would think if the Justice Department knows who Max is and knows who Alex is, obviously, and they say, "Hey, Max, you're going to this school where another one of your siblings lives or goes to school, excuse me. Maybe you could also try to get her under our wing a little bit too." So that, in my opinion, it's got to be part of this mission, this quote mission that he has, is also to win favor with Alex, I think, or know more about her or whatever. I don't know. It's got to be something like that.
I think you're right, because there's no way that the WJD wouldn't try to leverage that in the future. So it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see where Max truly lies with his loyalties as this book progresses. But that is the end of this chapter. Lots of stuff going on in this chapter. Hopefully we covered it well enough, even though we were sort of sprinkling in a bunch of other nonsense throughout the discussion. Even though this was only one chapter, we're still going to name an MVP. Delbert? Who would you like to name as the MVP of this chapter?
So, I'm going to pull a card out of Baylor's book and throw in Darla Dearborn as my MVP.
Of course.
Because had she not been just the worst 12-year-old at the school, by far, this event would have never happened with the Crucio and honey being stolen, and Tomo and Anna would still be at odds, and Alex would have no idea why this random guy from BMI hates her. So really, her being a dummy and advancing the plot for us has really led to this giant information dump.
The amount of times Darla has been made MVP so far in this story is very reminiscent of the fact that the quarterback is going to win the MVP of the Super Bowl just because of who they are, like the position they stand in. Like,
yeah.
Darla has backed her way into MVP every single time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For our international fans, ignore that.
Sure. it's like the people who say that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is not the best soccer player in the world. All right, Baylor, who's your MVP?
That was weird. That was wild. I wrote in the notes, it's my turn for AQ, gents. So I am going with Alexander Quick this arc, this chapter, whatever. And honestly, you know, I talk a lot. I've talked a lot last season. I've talked a lot this season about her character growth. I've really enjoyed it for the most part. And I made her my MVP here because of how she handled the news that Max gave her regarding his mission, the Mors Mortis Society, and her various siblings, and the fact that her dad is a man whore. I honestly thought she went about it in pretty much a calm way, like a very reasonable way, and also was very smart with how she addressed Tomo in the cafeteria, how she dealt with Darla, all that kind of stuff. So I just applaud her. You know, I'm sure it'll go back to the way it used to be at some point in the book, but for right now, well done, Alexandra.
All right. Well, I can't fault you for picking her. To be honest, I am just stumped and amazed that neither of you picked Maximilian for the MVP. In fact, I intentionally didn't pick him so that one of you could. And instead, I picked Angelique. And the only reason I picked Angelique is because she reacted the proper way to learning that her supposed best friend kidnapped her Jarvie and tried to sacrifice it to put a curse on her by giving her the cold shoulder. So Angelique was my MVP. And, you know, Max just has to do more.
Oh, Lord.
I honestly thought Delbert would pick him, to be honest. I wanted AQ from the beginning, but I thought Delbert would pick him. But
I feel like it was fitting, but also I like to go with those characters that are kind of on the side, but still played a huge part.
No, I totally
Angelique.
Agree with why you picked
I almost Darla. Picked Tomo, just because of how solid her reaction and everything has been. Like, being able to confront her fear of a person.
Sure. We also need to rename this, and since it's one chapter, I thought we could all just rename it Maximilian's Mission and call it good, since that's what it is, but that wouldn't do justice to the segment, and so instead, I renamed this chapter WTF Max.
Seems fitting.
If I was Alex, that's probably what I would be saying to him. I would be extremely confused at why the hell he knows all this and I don't.
That's fair.
Baylor, why did you rename this?
So now, terminology-wise, this isn't the proper use of the term if you go back to, like, Game of Thrones sense, but I renamed this arc A Bastard's Tale.
I like that title. I think it's really good. Even if it doesn't quite fit the strict definition of the word bastard, I like that a lot. Delbert?
Abraham Thorne and the Seven Dwarves.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Naturally.
I forgot that was part of our podcasting requirements, so that was off the top of my head.
Sure. Well,
sorry.
Baylor once again has the best title name by default.
Yeah.
So, regardless, this was one hell of a chapter. So now that we've finished discussing the chapter and doing our character MVPs and our renaming the arc, Baylor, why don't you remind us what your prediction from last week was about this chapter? I recall it being long.
So, I guess here goes nothing. I think Maximilian has been given a plan from Abraham Thorne. He is to be his inside man and will try to get to Governor General Huckstein to become a double agent for Thorne. Simultaneously, Max has been sent to keep an eye on Alex and keep her out of trouble. Furthermore, I think Max, after being invited to the Mors Mortis Society meetings, was instructed to figure out how to use the lands below for Thorne's benefit. I believe Max has direct contact with Thorne, and this will allow him, being Thorne, to talk to Alex in real time for the first time. Finally, I think the person we see in Alex's vision from a couple chapters ago went over the brazier that disappears into the lands below is Max, and he ends up dying.
Okay, well, a lot of stuff that we can't grade.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that we just can't grade. Because it just hasn't happened. We did learn that Max does have contact with Abraham Thorne.
Direct contact.
And I think that might be the only thing we can base our grade off this week.
I will say, I would even lean into grading, possibly judging by their conversation. Now, we don't know, but I would say it's a solid guess, at least, or hypothesis right now, that he is working for the WJD or WDJ on Abraham's orders.
It's definitely a good, solid theory.
Because he seems to not be very for the Confederacy, either.
He kind of exists in the middle a little bit.
Yeah.
My opinion is that much of this we can't grade today.
I agree.
And so I'm going to give you a 9 out of 10.
On the stuff we could grade, you did good. But you didn't mention that they're siblings. 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Ooh, okay. You've convinced me. 8.5 out of 10.
Oh, wow. 8.5. Okay. 8.5.
Still good.
Like, most...
We're going to have to keep this prediction at the forefront of our minds and revisit it fairly often, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
So we'll start this prediction at an 8.5 or 8 or whatever, and then we can adjust our scale as more information is revealed, perhaps.
Right.
Perfect.
Our next arc is going to be chapters 14, 15, and 16. So, Baylor, I was hoping that you'd show up with some questions so you could make a prediction. Before you do that, I'd like to tell you the names of the chapters. Chapter 14 is called Wizard Dueling. Chapter 15 is called The Dark Side. And chapter 16 is called A Walk in the Woods.
Okay.
Do you have questions for us?
I do, yes, I do. Thought about them at length. So hopefully I get some good quality answers out of somebody. Brady. Actually, I'm going to start with Delbert, yes, because he's usually the one who gives me the weird answers. I'm going to try to ask you the most straightforward question I've ever asked. In the chapter Walking in the Woods, who does Alex walk in the woods with?
Another person. Named Maximilian King.
All right. There it is. Actually a good answer. A useful answer. Okay. And then Brady, does the dueling club restart in these chapters?
No.
Okay.
Man, with those clear answers, this prediction better be perfect.
I hope it is, but I don't know. Okay. Let me think about my prediction for a second. Okay, so for my prediction, obviously the clear antagonist of the book, Darla, will spar once more with Alex with intentions to kill. Unfortunately, Alex will panic and recall a spell that worked really well in subduing her, Crucio, and she will cast that on Darla in defense. Also, unfortunately, one of the school's authorities, most likely Shirtliff, I'm guessing, because she seems to be everywhere, will see this, and Alex will get in some serious trouble. Then, big bro Max walks her in the woods and tells her, one, don't do stuff like that, bro, and two, here's the plan for my mission.
Okay. Solid enough prediction.
I liked it, except at the part where you said brother Max will walk her in the woods. I was getting a really bad Lenny vibe from the...
From Of Mice and Men.
Yeah. I was like, oh no.
Well, that'll be fun to see if that comes true and plays out to your advantage. With all that being said, with this wild ride we just went on through this conversation, the first 30 minutes of this podcast are an epic disaster, but regardless of that, that is the end of this week's discussion. Next week, as a reminder, we're hoping to have the author of a fan fiction starring Bagsy Beetlethorn come on for an interview, so that should be pretty exciting. And then in 2 weeks, we'll get back to Alexandra Quick and the Lands Below with chapters 14, 15, and 16. I think that's it.
Hem-hem?
Yes. Dolores?
No casting this week?
No casting this week.
Because we felt as nobody really made a prominent appearance in this chapter that's new to the casting. However, I would like to discuss something else just briefly on this mess of an episode.
Okay.
What do you guys think of that new picture into space from the James Webb Telescope?
Oh, it's so cool.
It's awesome. Awesome.
It's so good.
Yep.
I'm telling you, science is so freaking cool. Like, the fact that we can do stuff like that is incredible.
One thing I really find funny, though, like, I love this, don't get me wrong, and I think science is super smart, yada, yada, yada. But I find it funny that in our chemistry labs and stuff, we have to, like, measure the, I forget what it's called, but where the water in a tube goes below to get an accurate measurement.
The meniscus.
The meniscus, yes. We have to be so precise in everything. But when they're telling you to visualize this, they just say, for everyone, 6'5" or 4'1", just take a piece of sand, stretch out your arm, and that's how much of the sky this picture covers.
Yeah, and it's probably even smaller than that.
Probably. Like, but I like how inaccurate that is from scientists, but it's just to give you the idea.
Well, it's like, as a human being, we have no way to grasp the idea of how big the universe truly is.
Yeah.
It's the same way as we can't visualize what 1 trillion of anything would look like.
Yep.
You know, so that approximation is the best way to get people that don't understand anything about space, which is most people in society, what they're looking at. It is so cool.
So two things I wanted to say specifically to you guys, but everyone else can listen in. In this picture, we can apparently see galaxies that exist as we see them only like 200,000 years after the Big Bang. To put that in perspective, that's less time elapsed than when Yellowstone last exploded.
Yeah.
Here in Wyoming.
It's remarkable.
Additionally, the other thing I wanted to express, without a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt, there's got to be a lot of intelligent life out there.
I agree 100%. I think, actually, I've said this many, many times. Even when I was a teacher, I would say this to my classes, that I think it is irresponsible for a human being to think that in all of the cosmos, this is the only place that has the correct conditions for some sort of life. It doesn't have to be lifelike, like we know it at all, but there has got to be some other identifiable form of life in the vast, infinite space that exists out there.
This is hundreds of trillions of planets in the size of a piece of sand.
Baylor, can we put a link to this in our description of our podcast for this week so people can, if they haven't seen it, have some context about what we're talking about?
Absolutely. I will do that.
Because you're correct. That one picture is trillions and trillions of planets. You know?
Yeah.
The amount of chances for there to be life on even one of those trillions of planets is astronomical.
Oh, I would say not only with this just being the piece of sand that we hold at arm's length away from us, in just this area, there's got to be intelligent life. Probably hundreds of different intelligent species.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that we can't go find it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's irresponsible to believe that there's not intelligent life out there.
So
I agree.
Just wanted to bring that up because this came out this week. It'll be about a week old once this episode goes up. But it's probably the coolest thing I've seen this year. Maybe in the past decade.
Space is so hard for me to conceptualize. because it's not right in front of me.
Yeah.
But it's like equal parts fascinating and scary that that exists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like, it's crazy because, like, we're 7 minutes behind the sun. So as we're speaking right now, the sun could have extinguished and we wouldn't right. know for yeah. a few more minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy how little control we have when it gets to the cosmos. We have no control.
Every star you see, every planet you see, every speck of dust you see up in space, you're not seeing it as it is in this instant. You're seeing it as it was however long ago, yep. you know? And so the fact that we're seeing things that we estimate, we're seeing them as they were only 200,000 years after the Big Bang happened, we have no idea what they look like now.
No.
And we never will. Insane.
None of those could exist.
Yeah. It's crazy. Super cool stuff. So yeah. there will be a link to that in the description of the podcast. Baylor, do you have anything else to throw in?
No, I'm right along with you guys. I think it's crazy that much fits in one little speck of space. And when you guys go to click on this in the description, just know every little squiggly thing on that picture is a different galaxy with thousands, millions, trillions of stars and planets.
The only ones that aren't galaxies are the like very bright looking things, and that's because mm-hmm. a star in our own galaxy got in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very very bright with kind of the cross reflections yeah. on them. Those are stars in our galaxy, but everything else is its own galaxy. So
it's so wild.
Yeah.
It is remarkable.
I'm curious by the time I die, whenever that may be, how much more we even know. Or how, like, specific those pictures can become.
We will know more. You know, technology advances at a rate of 8 times per year. So, like, whatever technology humans have now, we'll have 8 times more advanced technology next year. And so, it's the same thing as how there's people alive that were born before there were cars. And now they can watch spaceships launch into space. It's the same thing with us. It's just going to be more refined than that. And so yep. I'm very excited for what is to come in the future in regards to that. But we should probably wrap this thing up. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you next Sunday. Have a good night.
Good night.